Chapter 2. Julia Evans sat at the dresser in her bedroom while the maid brushed daytime knots out of her long, chestnut hair. It had to be done every night. She hadn't allowed her hair to be cut for years, and now it hung almost down to her waist. Her best feature, everyone said. Striking. She studied her face in the mirror, plump-cheeked and bland, wearing a slightly sorrowful expression. It wasn't an ugly face, by any means. But at 17, some allure really ought to be evolving. Access Vanity Hash 12, she told her BioWare processor implant silently. At least she had had a sense of humour when she began this memory sequence. A mirage of her own face, 6 months younger, unfurled behind her eyes. She compared it to the one in the mirror. There was some change, a burning off of puppy fat. Her cheeks were rounder then, fractionally. There had been a time, a couple of months back, when she'd considered plastique, but eventually shied away. Having herself altered to match some channel starlet ideal would be the ultimate admission of defeat. As long as there was still some development, there was hope. Perhaps she was being impatient. But how wonderful it would be to make the boys ogle lustily. Commit Vanity Hash 25. The mirror image, with all its melancholia.
"Thank you, Adela," she said.
The maid nodded primly and made one final stroke with the brush before departing. Julia watched her go in the mirror, some deep instinct objecting to ordering people around like cattle. But it was an instinct which was nearly dead. The Swiss boarding school had seen to that. Besides, Adela wasn't one of the grudging ones. At 22 years of age, she was close enough in years for Julia to feel comfortable with her. And she was certainly loyal enough, to the extent of sharing Willem Manor's considerable quantity of below-stairs gossip. Julia shrugged out of her robe and flopped down on the big circular bed, stretching luxuriously on the apricot silk sheets. The room was huge, so much empty space, and all her own. So very different to the little stone burrow she'd lived in for the first 10 years of her life at the First Salvation Church, Warren. Space was undoubtedly the best part of being rich. The bedroom was a celebration of opulent decadence, with its satin rose ceiling, thick pile carpet, walk-through wardrobes, a marble bathroom. It was a feminine room, a boudoir, foreign and exotic. She'd spent a fortnight with an increasingly harried interior designer, selecting exactly the style she wanted. A distant memory of an old Memox video cartridge, a costume romance of handsome dukes and willowy heroines in a more genteel age. Her grandfather had come in when the bedroom was finished, his eyes rolling with bemused tolerance.
"Well, as long as you're happy with it, Julia."
He hadn't paid many visits after that. Not that she minded him, but it was delicious to be left alone. Privacy still seemed a bit of a novelty. Her security hardline bodyguards accompanied her everywhere outside the mansion. Not nudging her shoulder, they were too professional for that, but always close, always watching. And once inside Willem's wear-saturated perimeter, nothing went unseen. Some part of Julia's nature rebelled against being a cosseted princess, treated like some immensely precious and delicate work of art. Yes, she was valuable, but not fragile. However, there were subtle ways to defy the surveillance, to indulge herself without suffering the silent censure of the hardliner's ever-vigilant eyes, keeping some little core of personality secret to herself. Open channel to Manor Security Core. The Ware came online, the colourless menu of surveillance circuits and defence gear streaming into her mind, all of it listed as restricted. She fed her executive code in, and every restriction was lifted. Access surveillance camera, west wing, first floor, corridor. Route image into bedroom 3. She rolled over and rested her chin in her hands, legs waving idly. A picture formed on the theatre-sized, wall-mounted flat screen opposite the bed. It showed the corridor outside, a slightly fuzzy resolution. Adrian was walking down the thick strip of navy blue carpeting, dressed in a long burgundy toweling robe. Barefoot, she noted. Had no pyjama trousers, either. Peeping Tom, her mind chided. Her cheeks were suddenly very warm against her palms, but Pandora's box was open now. Adrian stopped outside one of the bedroom doors and looked furtively both ways along the corridor before opening the door without knocking. For one glorious instant, Julia allowed herself to believe it was her bedroom he'd entered, even twisting round to look. But of course her door was closed. Access surveillance camera, West Wing, Guest Suite 7. Katerina's room, bathed in a musky green light. Now here was something very interesting. By day, it was Adrian who took charge of their little group. Julia and Katerina listened to him, laughed at his jokes, followed him when he wanted to go swimming or horse riding or playing tennis. But here, in private, the roles were reversed. Adrian did as Katz told him. Julia studied her girlfriend as best as the irritatingly grainy image allowed. Katz had lost some of her youthful daytime frivolity, becoming imperious, a confidence verging on arrogance. Open memory file, code Amour Katz. So she could retain all the impressions she saw on the big screen, and then retrieve them at any time for future consideration. Amour Katz was going to be an objective study in seduction. Katz was kneeling on her bed as Adrian came in, dressed in a provocative taupe-coloured silk camisole top and a short waist slip, blonde hair bubbling down around her shoulders. A real-life sex kitten. She told Adrian to take his robe off. It was more like an order, Julia thought. Her heart leapt at the prospect of seeing Adrian naked at last, jealous and excited. Seeing him in his swimming trunks all afternoon had been a real treat. Adrian was 19 years old, ruggedly handsome, and possessed of a truly heavenly physique, each muscle perfectly proportioned, nothing like the ugly excess of a bodybuilder, just naturally lean. Mesomorph, her implant dictionary subsection told her. The toweling robe formed a dark puddle around Adrian's feet. Julia slowly turned onto her side, looking away from the flat screen, shame finally overpowering greed. Exit surveillance camera. Adrian had been so nice to her, treating her no differently than he did Katz during the day, as the three of them roamed Willem's vast grounds. She'd really hoped the attraction was mutual this time. She never seemed to be able to attract, much less hold, a boy as desirable as Adrian. The memory of Primate Marcus, leader of the First Salvation Church, floated out of that little dark core of anguish to haunt her once more. He'd favored her mother for several months when Julia had been 8. The patronage had enabled her to walk like a queen through the desert commune's airy underground tunnels, the happiest time of her young life. Daughter of the primate's chosen one. Primate Marcus was an obese 50-year-old, wrapped in a huge toga to hide his slovenly frame. With her eyes closed, she saw the big round head with its full grey beard leaning down towards her. Fat fingers adorned with gold rings tickled her ribs, and she shrieked her joy. The air had been thick and sweet from his marijuana.
One day soon, I'll fill you with Jesus' love.
His slurred voice rumbled. She had laughed then, shuddered now. But then, she thought miserably, that was always the way when it came to men, boys. She just never seemed to have any luck. So far, they had fallen into two categories. The first she hadn't even believed existed until afterwards. More handsome than Adrian, wittier than a channel comedian, with the culture and manners of a royal. But most of them had no real money. Executive assistants, flavor-of-the-month artists, impoverished aristocracy, men who could make deals to retire on if they just had backing. They haunted the fringes of society, sharks who homed in on her name, her money like fresh meat, which, in a way, she was. She had been too young, too stupidly blind with the whirlwind of holiday romance, and in bed his immaculate body had made her scream out in glory. Only afterwards did she find out she was simply part of his grand scheme. She had fled from one extreme to the other, back to her exclusive Swiss school, and into Joel's arms, a boarder at the boys' school down the road. He was the same age as her, the sensitive type, mild-mannered, caring, just perfect for a true first love. She knew he would never exploit her. And in bed he was an utter disaster. She would lie in his twitchy embrace and remember how sensational sex could be. Thankfully, it had fizzled out soon enough. Her leaving her school, him returning to France, neither making much effort to keep in touch. The soul bruising knocks and disappointments had set up a barrier, a psychological flinch, and the boys seemed aware of her mistrust, finding it difficult to breach. Anyone who could was too smooth. Those that couldn't would be like Joel. What she wanted more than anything was one good-looking boy who didn't know who she was to look at her and think, yeah. Then Katz had come to stay at Willem, injecting some much-needed laughter to the long procession of warm, wet, boring days. And she'd brought Adrian with her. Adrian, who fitted the bill as though he had been born for her. Mature, athletic, no doubt very experienced in bed, fun, intelligent, not at all arrogant. And when he had smiled and said hello, there had been no barrier, no hesitancy at all. It would have been utterly sensational if Katz hadn't enchanted him first. Julia shivered slightly at the involuntary recollection of primate Marcus and the cult. She'd been 10 when the upheaval came. The big Texan, later known as Uncle Horace, had arrived to take her away. Over the sea to a near-mythical Europe and a grandfather she'd never even known she had. Lady Fauntleroy, the other commune kids had teased before she went, bowing, curtsying. She'd giggled with them, playing along, secretly terrified of leaving the gently curving sandstone passages with their broad light wells and the eternal magnificent desert above. Her mother had stayed with the cult. Her father had accompanied her. The BioWare processors helped Julia suppress the name, the whole concept of father, pushing him below conscious examination, a fast, clean exorcism. He brought too much pain. Childhood ignorance was a blissful existence, she reflected. Europe and Philip Evans, her grandfather, and the astonishing revelation of Event Horizon. A company to rival a Combinate in size, heroically battling the British PSP, which surely made Grandpa a saint. Socialism was the ultimate antichrist. Her grandfather had sent her to the school in Switzerland, where starchy tutors had crammed her with company law, management procedures, finance, twittery grand dames teaching her all the social graces, etiquette and deportment, refining her. She'd dropped her American accent, adopting a crystal-cut English Sloan inflection to lend a touch of class. A proper lady. Then, on her 16th birthday, she'd left the school and spent a month in Event Horizon's ultra-exclusive Austrian clinic. She was given 5 BioWare implants, nodes of ferrodoxin protein meshed with her synaptic clefts, 3 memory cell clusters, 2 data processors, a whole subsidiary brain to cope with the vast data flows generated by Event Horizon. The parallel mentality didn't make her a genius, but it did make her analytical, objective. A conflation of logic and human inspiration, she was capable of looking at a problem from every conceivable angle until she produced a solution. An irrational computer.
"That's the only way, Julia," Philip had told her. "I'm losing track of the company. It's slipping away from me. All I ever get to see in cubes are the summaries of summaries. A shallow overview. That's not enough. Inertia and waste are building up. Inevitably, I suppose. Department heads just don't have the drive. It's a job to them, not a life. Maybe these nodes will enable you to control it properly."
Julia let desire war with her conscience. How did you captivate a boy like Adrian? Access surveillance camera, West Wing, guest suite 7. A laughing Katz was straddling Adrian, playing with him, her hands caressing, tongue working slowly down his chest. He was spread-eagled across the mattress, clutching the brass bedposts with a strength which came close to bending them, face warped in agony and ecstasy, pleading with her. "Commit amour, Katz." Julia had never done anything like this, not leading, not making all the moves. She wasn't sure she would have the nerve. Katz seemed so totally uninhibited, shameless. Was that the key? Could boys home in on abandon? Katz sat back on Adrian's abdomen, then crossed her arms and gripped the hem of the camisole. She peeled it languidly over her head, shaking her hair out. Julia felt a sharp spasm of envy at seeing her friend's well-developed body. That was one reason why Katz had Adrian, she acknowledged bitterly. They looked like godlings together. At least she had longer legs than Katz. Skinny, though. Nothing like as shapely. Two bean poles, really. Exit surveillance camera. Her mental yell was contaminated with anger and disgust. Peeking on the lovers had seemed like a piece of harmless fun. Certainly using the security cameras to spy on the manor's servants had been pretty enlightening. But this wasn't the gentle romantic lovemaking she'd been expecting. Nothing near. Pandora's box. And only a fool ever opens it. Anger vanished to be replaced with sadness. Alone again, more than ever now she knew the truth. Boys were just about the only subject she'd never discussed with her grandfather. It never seemed fair, somehow. He'd taken over every other parental duty, a solid pillar of comfort, support, and love. She couldn't burden him with more. Not now. Certainly not now. Part of the reason for her being at Willem was so she could be his secretary. Philip Evans needed a secretary like he needed another overdraft, but the idea was to give her executive experience and acquaint her with event horizon minutiae, preparing her to take it over. A terrifying, yet at the same time exhilarating prospect. Then, this morning at breakfast, he'd taken her into his confidence, looking even more haggard than usual.
"Someone is running a spoiler operation against Event Horizon," he'd said. "Contaminating 37% of our Memox crystals in the furnaces."
"Has Walshaw found out who was behind it?" she'd asked, assuming she was being told after the security chief had closed down the operation. It was the way their discussions of the company usually went. Her grandfather would explain a recent problem, and they'd go over the solution, detail by detail, until she understood why it had been handled that particular way. Remote hands-on training, he'd joked.
"Walshaw doesn't know about this," Philip Evans had answered grimly. "Nobody knows apart from me. I noticed our cash reserves had fallen pretty drastically in the last quarterly financial summaries. 48 million euro francs down, Juliet. That's 57 million new sterling, for Christ's sake. Our entire reserve is only 900 million euro francs. So, I started checking. The money is being used to cover a deficit from the micro-G crystal furnaces up at Xanthus. Standard accounting procedure. The loss was passed on to the finance division to make good for our loan repayment schedule. They're just doing their job. The responsibility lies with the micro-G division, and they've done bugger all about it."
She frowned, bewildered. "But surely someone in the micro-G division should have spotted it. 37%. What about the security monitors?"
"Nothing. They didn't trip. According to the data squirt from Xanthus, that 37% is coming out of the furnace as just so much rubbish, riddled with impurities. They've written it off as a normal operational loss, and that is pure bollocks. The furnaces weren't performing that badly at startup, and we're way down the learning curve now. A worst-case scenario should see a 5% loss. I checked with the Boeing Marietta Consortium, which builds the furnaces. No one else is suffering that kind of reject rate. Most of them have losses below 2%.
The full realization struck her then. "We can't trust security."
"God knows, Juliet. I'm praying that some smart-ass hot rod has found a method of cracking the monitor's access codes, however unlikely that is. The alternative is bad."
"What are you going to do?"
"Sit and think. They've been gnawing away at us for 8 bloody months. A few more days won't kill us. But we're taking a quarter of a million euro franc loss per day. It's got to stop, and stop dead. I have to know the people I put on it are reliable."
They couldn't afford major losses, Julia knew. Philip Evans's post-second restoration expansion plans were stretching the company's resources to breaking point. Micro-G products were the most profitable of all Event Horizon's gear. But the space station modules tied up vast sums of capital. Even with the Sanger space planes, reaching orbit was still phenomenally expensive. They needed the income from the Memox crystals to keep up the payments to the company's financial backing consortium. The fact that he'd admitted the problem to her and her alone had brought a wonderful sensation of contentment. They'd always been close, but this made the bond unbreakable. She was the only person he could really trust in the whole world, and that was just a little bit scary. She'd promised faithfully to run an analysis of the security monitor programs through her nodes for him, to see if the codes could be cracked, or maybe subverted. But she delayed it while she went horse-riding with Adrian and Katz, then again as the three of them went swimming, and now subverting the manor's security circuits. Guilt added itself to the shame she was already feeling from spying on the lovers. She'd been appallingly selfish, allowing a juvenile infatuation to distract her, betraying Grandpa's trust. Access high steel. Sight, sound, and sensation fell away, isolating her at the center of a null void. Numbers filled her mind. Nothing like a cube display, no colored numerals. This was elemental maths, raw digits. The processor nodes obediently slotted them into a logic matrix, a three-dimensional lattice with data packages on top, filtering through a dizzy topography of interactive channels that correlated and cross-indexed. Hopefully, the answer should pop out of the bottom. She thought for a moment, defining the parameters of the matrix channels, allowing ideas to form, merge. Any ideas, however wild. Some fruiting, some withering. Irrational. Assume the monitors are unbreakable. How would I go about concealing the loss? An inverted problem. Outside normal computer logic, its factors too random. Her processor nodes loaded the results into the channel structures. The columns of numbers started to flow. She began to inject tracer programs, adding modifications as she went, probing for weak points. Some deep level of her brain admitted that the metaphysical matrix frightened her, an eerie sense of trepidation at its inhuman nature. She feared herself, what she'd become. Was that why people kept their distance? Could they tell she was different somehow? An instinctive phobia. She cursed the BioWare. Philip Evans's scowling face filled her bedside phone screen.
"Juliet?"
The scowl faded.
"For God's sake, girl, it's past midnight."
He looked so terribly fragile, she thought, worse than ever. She kept her roguish smile firmly in place. School discipline, thank heavens. "So, what are you doing up, then?"
"You bloody well know what I'm doing, girl."
"Yeah, me too. Listen, I think I've managed to clear security over the monitor programs." He leaned in towards the screen, eyes questing.
"How?"
"Well, the top rankers anyway," she conceded. "We make 18 different products up at Xanthus, and each of the MicroG production modules squirts its data to the control center in the dormitory. Now, the control center where processes the data before it enters the company data net, so that the relevant divisions only get the data they need, maintenance requirements to procurement, consumables to logistics, and performance figures to finance. But the security monitoring is actually done up at Xanthus, with the raw data, and that's where the monitor programs have been circumvented. They haven't been altered at all."
"Circumvented how?"
"By de-streaming the data squirts from the MicroG modules, lumping them all together. The monitors are programmed to trip when production losses rise above 14%. Anything below that is considered a maintenance problem. At the moment, the total loss of our combined orbital production is 13.2%, so no alarm." Julia watched her grandpa run a hand across his brow.
"Juliet, you're an angel."
She said nothing, grinning stupidly into the screen, feeling just great.
"I mean it,"
he said. Embarrassed in the best possible way, she shrugged. "Just a question of programming, all that expensive education you gave me. Anybody else could have done it. What will you do now?"
"Do you know who authorized the de-streaming?"
"No, sorry. It began 9 months ago, listed as part of one of our famous simplification economy drives."
"Can you find out?"
"Tricky. However, I checked with personnel, and none of the Xanthus managers have left in the last year, so whoever the culprit is, they're still with us. Three options. I can try and worm my way into Xanthus's ware and see if they left any traces, like which terminal it was loaded from, whose access card was used, that kind of thing, or I could go up to Xanthus and freeze their records."
"No way, Juliet,"
he said tenderly.
"Sorry."
"Thought so. The last resort would be to use our executive code to dump Xanthus's entire data core into the security division storage facility and run through the records there. The trouble with that is that everyone would know it's been done."
and the culprit would do a bunk,
he concluded for her.
Yes.
So that leaves us with breaking into Xanthus. Bloody wonderful crack of my own wear. So, tell me why this absolves the top rankers.
It doesn't remove them from suspicion altogether. It just means they aren't the prime suspects anymore. Now we know the monitor codes weren't compromised. Whether security personnel are involved or not depends on how good the original vetting system is. Certainly someone intimate with our data handling procedures is guilty.
That doesn't surprise me. There's always rotten apples, Juliet, remember that. All you can ever do is hope to exclude them from achieving top-rank positions.
What will you do now?
The hand massaged his brow again.
Tell Walshaw for a start. If we can't trust him, then we may as well pack up today. After that, I'll bring in an independent and get him to check this mess out for me. Security, Xanthus management, the Memox furnace operators, the whole bloody lot of them.
What sort of independent? He grinned.
Work that out for yourself, Juliet. Management exercise.
How many guesses? She shot back, delighted. He was always challenging her like this, testing.
Three.
Cruel.
Good night, Juliet. Sweet dreams.
Love you, Grandy.
He kissed two fingers, transferring it to the screen. Her fingers pressed urgently against his, the touch of cold glass hard. His face faded to slate grey. Juliet pulled the sheet over herself, turning off the brass swan wall lights. She hugged her chest in the warm darkness, elated, far too alert for sleep to claim her. Access surveillance camera. West Wing. Guest Suite 7.